Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go. It's about a minute past the hour on this, the 23rd day of June, 2016. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com is where we live, and that's where you go if you want to jump in the chat room. Kind of quiet over there right now. Nobody but me and Jug of Punch and Sparky and Texas Betsy hanging out. But I'm sure folks will be wandering in presently. Maybe they're caught in the rain, too. My goodness gracious, what a storm today. I mean, it started in the middle of the night last night and has just camped out right here over central Appalachia. Fireworks displays in the form of lightning. The Weather Channel said something earlier this morning. I was over at the doctor's office where, mercifully, Fox News was not on. And it said that there was something on the, you know, I mean, the lightning strikes in West Virginia alone were measured in the, Agnes couldn't tell if it was 200 or 2,000, because we were kind of being deafened by a thunder peal at that moment. I've not seen anything like this in ages, at least 10 years, probably closer to 20. You know, the birth of all of our children were attended by natural disasters. In the case of Margie, her birth was attended by the worst ice storm in that part of West Virginia in over 100 years. Ferg's birth was attended by the deepest Christmas Day snow in living memory in that part of the state. And Doodle, when Doodle came along, Doodle had a comet hanging in the sky in March. And her birth was attended by 500-year floods. And that's why a petition was circulated and signed and dropped off at the house one day that said, please don't have any more children. We can't cope with the frogs and locusts or rivers of blood. Yeah, I haven't seen rain like this since Doodle was born. This is astonishing. Places that don't flood are flooding. Sounds crazy. I've seen water standing on the road on an uphill slope. It's just bizarre. And it looks to continue. We're under a flash flood warning until 9:30 this evening. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Until 9:30 this evening. And there's tornado watches popping up all over West Virginia, which are kind of unusual. But maybe not with climate change. Stuff is just, the ground is saturated. Places that you never see with water on them have water on them. It's pretty astonishing. So, the power has been blinking intermittently. And I tweeted earlier that if the program disappears, that's why. I haven't gotten disgusted and just walked away from the microphone or anything. You know, we'll do it live! Sucks. No. It will be because our antiquated early 20th century coal-fired power grid has given up the ghost. I mean, the thunder, I mean, it's been so consistent. At one point in time, it just sounded like on Memorial Day, the Riders of Remembrance, or whatever they call themselves, passed through here on their way to the wall in Washington, D.C. And when there's a good cluster of them, it goes on for a while, just that long, droning Harley-Davidson noise. And this sounds like that on steroids. I mean, this is like a thunderstorm on another planet. Because when you get a thunderstorm in the mountains, what's left of them, it's different than a thunderstorm out on the wide prairie or the open plains. Out there, there's no boundary to your vision, and the horizon is where the flat land meets the flat sky, and you can see stuff coming from miles away. Not so here in and amongst the oldest mountains on Earth. No, the thunder has a reverb effect, really, as it bounces back and forth off the hillsides and around. And truth be told, in terms of druthers, this would be a great day to have, you know, kind of a house on a hilltop or halfway down a hill or something like that, and a big wraparound front porch and a rocking chair. And you just sit and you watch the rain fall, and you listen to the rain, and you listen to the drumming of the thunder. I mean, this is, dare I say it, for a non-spiritual person, this is an almost mystical rain. And I was driving across the New River Gorge Bridge earlier, and visibility was nothing. I mean, this is the kind of rain that you see, when the Weather Channel leaves its reporters out in the middle of a hurricane, and all you see is it's like a grainy, distorted sort of picture, but you're pretty sure there's an unfortunate reporter in there somewhere. Yeah, like that. And so if the program disappears, you'll know why. I hope it doesn't, but it might. Let me do something real quick while I'm thinking about it. Ta-da! Ta-da! And thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa. Brother Deacon Asa noting, coming through loud and clear on my Ohio Superboard 2 via TuneIn, Brother Bob. Appreciate it, Brother Deacon Asa. Appreciate it indeed. It's good to know. That's quite. And Asa is digging through an extensive collection now to come up with something new to listen on every evening. It's kind of like the stuff that clutters the Titanic dinner table every Tuesday. It becomes a challenge after a while. Just as a reminder, this is a program that is listener supported, and consequently I want to make sure and thank our subscribers. Thank you to Randy and Joyce, and to Brenda, and thank you as well to our buddies over at Bomasa. I don't know if I'm allowed to give out names. And thank you to our old friend Philip. That knocked the fundraising goal, which started the evening, ended the evening last night at $409. That knocked the fundraising goal down to. $372, and then Janie stepped up and Emilio stepped up, and that knocked it down to $319. So that's where we stand in terms of bill paying these days. $319 to go to finish off fundraising for the evening. One at $319 and 10 at $31.90, and 31.9 people at $10, and you get the idea. Yes. So hopefully folks will wander on over to headonradionetwork.com and avail themselves of the PayPal interface under the tab Contribute, or will use the United States Postal Service, checks and money orders made payable to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. And just shoot me a note so I can tell Boss Man Wayne that he can leave the spider-proof gloves in the truck, and all he'll have to take with him is his trusty anti-Klansman Louisville Slugger. Okay. Well, with the preliminaries having been dispatched with... God, that sounds like something out of Caesar's Gallic Wars. He started everything with a having been participial phrase. But the preliminaries having been dispatched with, let us stop shilly-shallying about and run straightway to examine just what sorts of thorns are on in what sorts of sides on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. We're all waiting to hear the results of the Brexit vote in the UK. Those results are expected at about... maybe 9 tonight or so. Because they're expected at 0300 Greenwich Mean Time. So that would, subtract 6 and you get Eastern Daylight Time, I think. Interesting. I don't know. None of my business, but I kind of hope the UK decides to stay in the European Union, because a fragmented Europe seems to have a nasty habit of turning into a blood-soaked Europe. I mean, they do have a history, right? Yeah. So let me know if you see stuff coming in, or I'll let you know, or yeah. Let's see, Steve asking, Brother Usher Steve, is that hissing in the background, rain? It's either rain, or it is, I don't know, have I got the expander gate turned up too much? That can make it breathy a little bit, but, probably not, because the cardioid polar pattern of the microphone is not pointed at outside. And we seem to be in a bit of a break between cloudbursts right now. But the computer fans are right considerably loud. That noise goes away a little bit if I pull the microphone a little closer to me. No, it is. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday here, and we have a rich abundance of stuff to look at. You know, the Supreme Court upheld the University of Texas's so-called affirmative action plan, you know, the plan whereby the plan whereby they refused to not let people of color into the university, you know, just because they were people of color. The originator of the case was a young woman by the name of Abigail Fisher. She couldn't get into the University of Texas because she couldn't meet the threshold for a state program that lets in the top 10% of student achievers, you know, the top 10% of graduated high school students in their classes to the public universities in the state. And she's been hanging around until finally, maybe today, she was told by the Supreme Court, no, really, really, Abby, goodbye. A hashtag, of course, developed among the Twitterers. The hashtag is BYE, by Abby, ABBEY. Another hashtag developed because, see, she didn't have as good of grades as the people she was claiming were let in ahead of her based on race. Another hashtag developed called Becky with the bad grades. And there was, of course, the other one, I guess I got to sit down and watch the film from which the phrase by Felicia, arises, because Abigail Fisher got by Felicia'd as well. It's just so hard to keep up with these young whippersnappers and their social media word sayings, right? Yeah. One tweet out there. Abigail Fisher's like, "Wow, but what about all my white privilege?" Hopefully, this issue has gone to bed, but it won't. It hasn't. You know better. When it comes to trying to reinforce racism and reinforce bigotry and reinforce white privilege, the white wing never takes a day off. Oh, no. No, 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 no. So what else is there out there for this Thorn in the Side Thursday? A little bit of good news. You remember toward the end of the program, maybe it was Tuesday? I mentioned the fact that a 17-year-old young woman who had done an exemplary job in her masonry skills test competition sponsored by Skills USA got bumped out of her slot in order to send the third-place boy instead. She only found out that she had been bumped out of the national competition because she saw the kid posting on Facebook. Well, there's a happy ending. This is like getting a thorn pulled out of your side. The young woman is instead going to go to the competition. Shania Clifford is her name. And Skills USA, because of the massive amount of negative publicity, their bigotry caused, they've fixed it, or so they claim. So she'll be going to the National Skills USA event in Louisville, Kentucky. Okay, I've got some. This one's kind of tough to get your head around. There's a city councilwoman in Talabama, and I guess you can begin to infer the level of ignorance that's going to be involved, since it is in fact Talabama. Sheila Tyson is pissed off because her town wants to pay some monies, namely $45,500, to remove some buildings on the site of what is being deemed the Birmingham, Alabama Holocaust Education Center. Now, the Birmingham Holocaust Education Center has raised around $500,000 to build a memorial park alongside a memorial to 9/11 there in Birmingham. And, like I said, this is tough to get your head around. Sheila Tyson, who sits on the city council, maybe I should just play the audio, because this, wow, just, you know, wow. Now, if you ask me, I would say that anything that memorializes the oppression and brutalization of other human beings is probably a good idea to have one of them, whatever it is, in Alabama. I mean, the bottom line in Alabama is that the entire state, and you know, I say this as someone who was born and raised there, the entire state's existence is predicated on oppression. The first people who came there, and well, what'd they do? They brought the people they were oppressing with them, to wit, slaves of African descent. And once they got there, they started oppressing the people who lived there. The geography, the land that is Alabama, is beautiful indeed. Magnificent. Makes for a great place to set up a culture. And many such cultures existed at the time that the white folks arrived. The Choctaw, the Chickasaw, the Cherokee, the Muscogee, otherwise known as the Creeks. And of course, by the time of Andrew Jackson, by the time of Andrew Jackson's presidency, they were all being genocided right out of their homes and driven away to far, hot, dusty, inhospitable Oklahoma stand. There are memorials to the Trail of Tears now, particularly in northwest Alabama. But the whole state is predicated on one or another degree of oppression and murder. And so anytime that you can draw the attention of good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Alabamians to their history of murder, oppression, and brutalization. It's a good thing. You know, same thing goes for Mississippi, same thing goes for Georgia. I mean, the oppression starts before even the English-speaking white oppressors arrived, because there was a tremendous, and I'm fascinated with it, because there's so, they've never found the site, archaeologists, historians have never found the site of it, but the Battle of Maubla, somewhere likely somewhere down on the short grass prairie, in or around what is now Dallas County, Alabama, which is where Selma is, began the bloodletting. And that was DeSoto's people. Ridden with disease, filthy, unbathed, nasty, carrying their bloody cross before them. Hundreds, if not thousands, died there as the native peoples tried to stop him once and for all, and sadly failed. And so there's hopes to have a Holocaust memorial in Birmingham. But Sheila Tyson doesn't want any public money spent in furtherance of the goal of building it. Because, see, she has asked the city to give public monies to support a private historically black cemetery. Yeah, let's cut to the audio. One hopes. Working. Well, we will try this again. AL.com has the video. It is from a city council meeting of the Birmingham City Council. Here we go.
Memorial, isn't it still for dead people?
No.
It's nothing like that. It is for dead people. It's still, are the people, they memorializing the deceased?
Yeah, but they're not buried.
I know. Dead is dead. What's the difference? I want to know the difference between the memorial at Shadowlawn and this memorial. That we couldn't give money to the memorial at Shadowlawn, but you can give memorial money to this one. And all I'm asking is the difference. Well, I can get, let me understand. The money that Shadowlawn needed was to remove existing structures too, and it wasn't going to the cemetery. It was going to the nonprofit, just like this going to a nonprofit. So what's the difference? That's all I'm asking. What is the difference? Both of my memorials, that organization, nonprofit, is a memorial. So what is the difference?
I'll try. I'm not sure that I have the vocabulary or explanatory power to indicate the distinction, although it's clear to me from a legal standpoint that there is a distinction. The distinction may be based upon not the fact that there are memorials in Shadowlawn and this is a memorial. The distinction may be based upon the fact that Shadowlawn is an entity for the transaction of private businesses, whereas this type of memorial the Holocaust Memorial is kind of what I call, and the courts call, government speak or public speak. It's an expression of the city about remembering something.
Well, if you can't remember all the slaves that was buried out here at Chatillon, what is it?
I can remember Chatillon very well because my mother and father are buried there. So that's not a problem for me.
Well, that is the oldest cemetery in the country with back to civil rights, back to the World War One.
Jim Stanley can help you with a distinction better than I can.
Council, the Holocaust Project, and there will be agreements coming to the Economic Development Budget Finance Committee to give more detail, I believe, next Monday. It's being done as an economic development project. It's expected to be advertised as an amenity that tourists can visit when they visit the city, just as you go to other cities and look on that have these kind of memorials. They're listed as tourist attractions. So the city is able to provide money to private entities for economic development purposes, and that's how this particular project is being structured.
Well, if this is the oldest cemetery in the world, if this isn't a tourist attraction, I want to know what is. President Obama's wife, great-great-granddaddy was buried out there. That's not history. I don't see the difference, and I'm gonna leave that alone because I see the difference now. I know the difference, but I'm gonna leave that right there.
Sweet Jesus. So, in essence, the Holocaust Memorial in Birmingham would be turned over to the city of Birmingham once it's built, and it is a public space for all the public to visit for purposes of remembering a horror, a particular horror. The cemetery, while it may have historically significant dead people buried in it, I think dead is probably superfluous linguistically when we're talking about people, is a private entity where, I guess, presumably, people are still burying folks? I mean, I don't know. But the crass insensitivity, the crass ignorance of suggesting that there's racism involved because dead people are dead people. No, an individual who dies quietly in their sleep at 93 is not quite the same as someone who was victimized by the Nazi regime under you-know-who. Now, is that to say that there should not be other memorials? No, it is not. Maybe the United States needs to become a nation of memorials. Maybe there should be, for instance, a slavery memorial on Wall Street, right next to that filthy bull. Because, of course, the wealth that was generated through the use of slave labor is still out there doing its work today, because wealth is wealth is wealth is wealth. But wow. And really, I mean, there's no dead folks at the Birmingham Holocaust Memorial. Maybe there will be some artifacts, but there's no actual burials there. And do you really want to turn a cemetery into a tourist attraction? Ouch. Ouch. Should the state of Alabama have a slavery memorial? Probably in every city, town, and county? Yes. Should Alabamians not be able to turn their heads without recognizing the foundation upon which the cornerstone of the state was laid? Yeah, you might recall Alexander Stevens, the vice president of the Confederacy, declared in his inaugural address that slavery was the cornerstone of the new Confederate States of America, back when he, like ever so many thousands of others, committed treason against the United States. I don't think counsel for the council did himself any favors by describing these memorials as tourist attractions. It's not quite the same thing as like what you back before the interstates went through, and the highway through here was the main drag through this part of the country. It's not quite like the old Quonset huts and stuff that sat by the side of the road with signs saying things like, "See the baby rattlers!" And you paid your nickel or whatever, and you went in and you saw a little glass case full of, you know, rattles for babies. Not little tiny snakes slithering all over the place, as your imagination was titillated in horror to imagine. By the way, for those of you familiar with it, the Mystery Hole is apparently up for sale. It is a, an institution, if you will, around these parts. Got a couple of hundred large laying around. You too can be a part of the new Appalachian tourism economy by purchasing the Mystery Hole. I hope it doesn't shut down. It's a lot of fun. But God Almighty, dead people are dead people. Which is not to say some dead people are more dead than other dead people. But wow, just wow. Because the implication of Ms. Tyson saying, "I know what the reason is, but I'm not going to say it." Well, sheesh. Now, the sit-in at the House of Representatives has closed for the time being because after they climbed over the in-sitters at about 2:30 this morning, Paul Ryan, supposedly the healer and bringer together of the House of Representatives, who wanted nothing to do, because, of course, he's well paid to ignore it, wanted nothing to do with any votes about any bills, about any... he gaveled the House into recess about 2:30 this morning, whatever, and he did so after being unable, if I read the stories correctly, being unable to have a vote on Zika funding, you know, the Zika virus. Because even though the Republican House of Representatives has been implored time after time after time after time to provide an appropriate funding level for research and preparation for the Zika virus, they haven't. They've just kind of waited around to see if maybe that was another one of those plots that the Kenyan Muslim usurper had foisted onto the American people because he hates our way of life. But suddenly, at 2:30 this morning, with a growing number of members of the House sitting on the floor of the House, Suddenly, Paul Ryan decided that it was time to have a Zika vote. Yeah, no, really, he did. Why? Because if the Democrats were going to have a political talking point saying that the House Republicans refused to deal with our gun violence problem in the United States, well, he, Paul Ryan, being a super genius, because he is, just ask him, he'll tell you. Jesus. What passes for intellect in the Republican Party never ceases to amaze. He decided 2:30 this morning was a great time to have a Zika vote. So that they could, so that the Republicans could then say, "Well, the Democrats don't care if your precious fetus comes out with a tiny head because of the Zika virus." Never mind the fact that we hadn't shown much interest in voting on it before, but I mean, yeah, that's what our talking point is. That's what Speaker Ryan told us to say. And you know who told Speaker Ryan who told us to say that? You know who told Speaker Ryan to say that? NRA. Yeah, because the NRA owns our white asses. They absolutely do. The check clears every time, and as long as the check clears, I'm going to keep on voting pro-NRA. So this, in turn, has led has led another super genius, a character by the name of Cam Edwards, who apparently hosts something called NRA News Radio. So you get an idea of what we're dealing with here. To hot up his microphone and explain to John Lewis. Maybe we should have saved this for More End Monday, because by God, it qualifies. To gunsplain the civil rights movement to John Lewis.
And again, the I don't know what to call it. I mean, a sit-in, again, generally speaking, we saw these sit-ins in the civil rights movement that were advocating for individuals being able to enjoy the same rights that other Americans enjoyed. Right? I mean, that's what the protests were. That's what they were. We're sitting in at this lunch counter, and we're not leaving until we get served. Not, we're sitting at this lunch counter, and we're not leaving until you remove this item from the menu.
Right. Because that's what the civil, that's what the lunch counter sit-ins were about. The lunch counter sit-ins were about a grilled cheese and tomato soup. Yeah. They weren't about institutional racism enshrined in almost all levels of government, especially in the Confederacy states. They weren't about voting rights. No, it was about being able to get served at the lunch counter. Damn it! Bring me some ham and eggs.
We're going to sit right here, and we're not leaving until you recognize us as human beings, as Americans, who have the same rights that guy has over there.
And you can say it, Cam, can't you? You redheaded hellcat, Cam. You can say it. You can say that white guy over there has. No. It's never been about race in an aisle, no.
She has over there. That's what the sit-ins were about in the civil rights movement. This, on the other hand, this isn't Congress demanding more rights for Americans. This isn't Congress demanding rights for themselves.
No, because, you know, a 24-year-old guy who doesn't get to be a 25-year-old guy because the NRA is the single largest, most well-funded, most powerful terrorist organization on earth, and because of that, the 24-year-old guy doesn't get to be a 25-year-old guy. That has absolutely nothing to do with that 24-year-old guy's rights, because he doesn't have any rights because he's dead now. dead people. I mean, and you know, ask Sheila Tyson. Dead people is dead people. Dead is dead. And dead ain't got no rights. Wow. Oh, really? Of course. I mean, it just makes sense, right? I mean, the Congress wasn't standing up for any rights. The Congress wasn't standing up for the right of six-year-olds to make it to third grade, where they start learning their multiplying and their dividing and their various other high-order cipherins. No, hell no. What was the Congress doing there? What was John Lewis doing? You hero of civil rights. Cam Edwards, you.
This is Congress demanding power. These are House Democrats demanding the authority and the power to ignore the Fifth Amendment when they see fit.
That's right. The NRA is standing up for your Fifth Amendment rights, citizen. The right against self-incrimination. Because that's what they got. That's their talking point. That the government is going to take vast and sweeping powers to keep people from exercising their right to keep and arm bears. And after that, well, you know, the next thing you know, they'll be quartering troops in your home. And beating confessions out of you. Oh, wait, that already happens. CF Chicago and the Fell Street Station, the Chicago Police's own little black ops site there in the city limits. Right, I get that. You know, you might want to stick to the Second Amendment, Cam. You goddamned idiot.
To view the Bill of Rights as an impediment to lawmakers, to treat it as such.
Now, this guy is actually presenting an argument on behalf of people who want to, you know, shoot up schools, movie theaters, and nightclubs. That's who this guy's defending. Hard cases make bad law, baby. They really, really do. But the NRA says that in order to preserve the corporate share prices and the profit margins of people like Sturm Ruger and Remington USA and Sig Sauer and Smith & Wesson, et cetera, et al., ad nauseam, ad sanguinam, that, you know, Congress really can't do anything about it. You know, living with the occasional mass murder of innocence is, you know, that's just the, well, they're admitting that my own thesis is true. The NRA just says that to live in the United States, you have to play in their death lottery, whether you want to or not, and that we're just going to have to water the tree of liberty from time to time with the blood of six-year-olds and people who like to dance. You know what's interesting? It's always somebody else who keeps watering that goddamn tree of liberty of theirs. It's always somebody else's blood who is the winds up being the natural manure, as Thomas Jefferson put it, of that tree of liberty. How come is it that it's never any of the pasty-faced, doughy white people like Cam Edwards who get tonight playing the role of the manure of the tree of liberty? Cam Edwards. No.
And to try to degrade. And kind of like what they say with ISIS, right? Degrade and destroy. We're kind of witnessing the degradation and the destruction of the Bill of Rights right now.
And no, we're not. No, Cam, we're not. What we're witnessing is a few people with an operating conscience trying to keep the people that you protect from killing more of the, you know, innocents. Because you guys are certainly not interested in preventing any of it. Because whether you admit it or not, your clients' sales go through the roof every time we have one of these mass murders of innocents. I had a story earlier today from Haley in Arkansas. Haley simply said via Twitter, the American disease spreads. There was apparently a mass shooting at a movie theater in Germany, according to German public television. Now, the difference? Well, in this case, a masked gunman went into a German movie theater earlier this afternoon, German time, and took hostages. The guy had a rifle. He was in a community called Viernheim, and that's near Frankfurt. And a little before 3 o'clock, he ran into the movie theater and took hostages. Interestingly, the police in Viernheim told CNN that no one was actually injured by gunfire inside, aside from the attacker, because the police moved in, tear gassed the hell out of everybody. Which, you know, nobody likes tear gas. But given a choice between being tear gassed in order to take down a guy with his freedom protector and, you know, just being killed by the freedom protector, the tear gas is probably the option most people would choose. The report went on to say that there were hostages in the vicinity of the individual. It was at this point that he was fatally shot by special forces. The individual added, I have no knowledge that anyone else was harmed. About 50 to 100 German police officers rushed onto the scene. An employee at a cafe said, our cafe went into lockdown. We brought all of our customers out of the back door. And another individual said, this is something very unusual for our town. I've never seen anything like that. I never want to see anything like that again. German police said there's no indication the incident was terror-related. You know, just a guy with a gun. So, at the very least, maybe we can draw a couple of conclusions. One, the guy did not have access to lots and 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 lots of firearms with lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of spare magazines. And lots of pistols. We can also draw the conclusion that the fact that this is anomalous and people are shocked and horrified by it in a country like Germany, we can draw the conclusion from this that they don't have a National Rifle Association to buy off and terrorize their government. but we do. Oh, we do, we do, we do. And we've got enough to make up for pretty much anybody else's lack. Sadly. Tragically. Oh, yes, we've got a... We got a real busy NRA. But let's finish up with constitutional scholar and civil rights white-splainer, Cam Edwards.
Where, again, you've got self-professed thought leaders who say it's time to repeal the Second Amendment. The Constitution itself is outdated. And then you've got lawmakers who just want to ignore the Bill of Rights.
Yeah, no. No, no one was on the floor of the House of Representatives last night at the sit-in saying ignore the Bill of Rights. That's the problem with the country's, the world's largest, most well-funded, most powerful terrorist organization, the NRA. They just make shit up. And by the way, mark your calendars now for July the 5th. Because John Lewis has said that when the House returns from its recess, when the Republicans find, he says the sit-in is going to start all over again. Historically, this is interesting. Because the House has faced questions like this before. And it didn't... It didn't handle it any better than it's handling it now. A similar question, not particularly, you know, this question. As I have alluded to, during the 19th century, about the mid-19th century, the issue of slavery had become so contentious in the United States that the House of Representatives passed a rule saying that it would be contrary to the rules of the House of Representatives. And by the way, the only reason that the House leadership was able to get away with this was because of the constitutional provision that allowed Southern slave owners, slaves, to be counted for population purposes as three-fifths of a human being. Otherwise, they would never have been able to pull together the votes to do this. But they passed a rule saying that nothing relating to the abolition of slavery would ever be allowed to be discussed. The Republican-controlled House of Representatives and the Republican-controlled Senate of the United States are coming perilously close to behaving in a similar fashion in regard to the horror perpetrated against this country. by the National Rifle Association. And yes, you heard that right. Cam Edwards, pasty-faced, doughy gunsplainer for the NRA, claimed that John Lewis and his colleagues, by sitting down in the well of the House of Representatives, was like, and these are his words, not mine, like ISIS. A dog always returns to its vomit, doesn't it? Sorry for those of you in the dinner hour. But it wasn't that long ago, for instance, that Sachs Bachambalis, a Senate candidate in the state of Georgistan, was running ads. Yeah, it was a decade ago. Running ads against his opponent, a disabled American veteran, a war-disabled American veteran, Max Cleland, by morphing Max Cleland's face into the face of Osama bin Laden. You remember that, don't you? Because I know you do. Yeah. So here we are at the end of the filibuster. If you would like to participate in the conversation, you are welcome so to do. You can jump in on either line 1, 304-574-8178, which shares a computer with Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, from anywhere on the planet. If one of those is engaged, the other is not usable. Or you can always call the stress line, named for Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. Either way is fine, but beyond that, we got more thorns, because it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And we're trying to raise $319. $319 between now and, say, 9 p.m. And thanks again to Janie in Texas, and thanks to Earther for getting us started. And thanks to our subscribers overnight, as previously noted. Oh, well, you'll decide. We'll take a break. It being Thursday, we have, of course, via Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, the Green News Report. It's up next. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn.
Thank you. girl. Ooh, I need a woman child. Don't wanna be like Freddy now. Cause Freddy's dead.
Thursday, June 23, 2016.
In a momentous decision, Pacific Gas and Electric announced it will not pursue license renewal for the two reactors at the Diablo Canyon nuclear site near San Luis Obispo.
Lights out for the last nuclear power plant in California. Judge strikes down new rules for fracking on public lands. Study finds high levels of toxic chemicals in the bodies of people living near fracking sites. Plus, researchers in Iceland figure out how to turn carbon emissions into stone.
Really? Rock on. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
It can get so hot, you can actually fry an egg right on the sidewalk.
Yeah, that's how hot it... Wait, why are we using eggs to tell temperature? Well, I don't understand this. Like, people in Africa are watching this going, we would never do that in Africa, huh? We don't do such things, and we don't like wasting food. And also, we don't have sidewalks. Yeah, that is part of it.
This is your Green News Report.
Because we call them pavements, you racists. That's why.
Okay, Desi Doyen, before you get to today's Green News Report, just a quick thanks to those who have stopped by bradblog.com/donate to celebrate our 700th episode of the Green News Report the other day. Thank you to everyone who has done that. To those of you who haven't, what's the holdup? Now that it's our 701st episode, I guess it doesn't actually matter.
Well, here goes 701.
Get to it.
The last nuclear power plant in California, the Diablo Canyon Nuclear Generating Station south of San Francisco, will be phased out by 2025 under a joint agreement announced on Tuesday between the plant owner, Pacific Gas and Electric, plus labor and environmental groups. It's primarily due to the plant's proximity to numerous earthquake fault lines of particular concern after the Fukushima nuclear plant disaster. PG&E said it will replace the plant's 9% share of the state's electricity with renewable energy, but closing the plant won't help in the fight against global warming since it will be swapping one source of carbon-free electricity for another rather than closing fossil fuel sources.
Well, this is very cool news. No more nuclear plants in California once this shuts down. Of course, the shutdown of these plants takes How long?
Decades and billions.
Decades and billions. So even when we shut down these nuclear plants, we are still stuck with them forever.
That's true. Plus, some environmentalists are concerned about closing down nuclear generating stations because they believe that we won't be able to cut carbon emissions fast enough to avoid catastrophic climate change without using nuclear energy.
Silly environmentalists.
Two developments related to fracking. A new study has detected high levels of toxic chemicals used in fracking in the bodies of people living in heavily fracked Pavilion, Wyoming. While other studies have focused on water pollution impacts of fracking, this was the first study to analyze fracking air pollution impacts, studying residents who live nearby, finding that they have a higher amount of 8 toxic chemicals, including benzene and other carcinogens, in their urine than the general population. In a setback for the Obama administration, a federal judge this week struck down new federal rules proposed to regulate the controversial natural gas drilling technique on the grounds that the Interior Department does not have the authority to regulate fracking on public lands. Neither does the EPA, for that matter. That's thanks to a special carve-out for the fracking industry in the 2005 Safe Drinking Water Act, passed during the Bush administration, in which the Republican majority in Congress explicitly excluded hydraulic fracturing operations on public lands from federal regulation. California has 66 million dead trees. That's according to a new assessment by the U.S. Forest Service this week. It's a bad sign for a state already mired in an epic 5-year drought and already battling an intense and early wildfire season. The Forest Service blames the historic tree die-off on severe drought, a dramatic rise in bark beetle infestation, and overall hotter temperatures thanks to global warming. In a statement, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, who oversees the Forest Service, again urged Congress to please increase the Forest Service firefighting budget, as he has requested every summer since taking office. Finally, researchers in Iceland have found a new way of tackling climate change by storing carbon dioxide emissions underground, where it turns to stone. Literally, turns out that CO2 dissolved in water reacts chemically with a specific type of volcanic rock called basalt, of which Iceland has plenty. The CO2 reacts with the basalt to form carbonate minerals, literally mineralizing into limestone in about 2 years. Now, this is only a pilot project, and it's expensive and requires water and volcanic rock. But if it can be scaled up, it could be a breakthrough solution to capturing carbon emissions.
Thank you, Desi Doyen. You are the basalt of the earth. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Man, I saw that bumper coming from a mile away. ELO and the Electric Light Orchestra and Turn to Stone. You know, that's a great idea. Capturing carbon and pumping it underground where it interacts with basalt to become homemade limestone over the course of about 2 years. That's a great idea. Of course, as Desi Doyen notes, it's expensive, and you got to have a lot of basalt. You know what else is a great idea? And I'm just going to float this one. Just trial balloon here. Just see what you think. How's about we stop creating so much greenhouse gas in the first place?
We can't do that, Bob. We're CO2 junkies. We're hooked. We can't get clean.
Do you know how much CO2 is directly produced by solar panels that are producing that are gathering in electrical photovoltaic energy from the sun? Yeah, not much. Like, none. Let's see. I guess I'm going to have to just check this every day. I don't know why this damn thing drops, but it does. Okay, so the stress line is now connected. If you want to jump in and conversate in the program, that's fine by me. I look forward to it, because this is Conversation Radio. It's once again, false choices. You know, we do have a choice. We don't have to. We can begin to transition away from this stuff. And, of course, once again, I've got another one of those bullshit articles out there, just to sort of warn you about. According to the Bloomberg New Energy Finance folks, coal and gas are beginning a terminal decline, and it'll begin in less than 10 years. Bloomberg's New Energy Outlook says cheaper coal and cheaper gas will not derail the transformation and decarbonization of the world's power systems. By 2040, zero-emission energy sources will make up 60% of installed capacity. Wind and solar will account for 64% of the 8.6 terawatts of new power generating capacity added worldwide over the next 25 years, and for almost 60% of the $11.4 trillion invested. Of course, this is an outlook generated for people who are investing in, you know, capitalist enterprises. And, you know, if capitalism has to be involved, for Christ's sakes, it would be awfully helpful if they would involve themselves in renewable energy instead of filthy-ass oil, coal, and gas. But it's mostly bullshit. That's a feel-good article. That article was mentioned, republished, whatever, on Think Progress, so that people could say, "See, yay, everything's going to be all right. It's okay. Our fossil fuel addiction isn't going to kill us after all, because we can get clean someday." Which is, of course, the epitome of junkie thinking. I'll get clean someday. I mean, I know it because I recognize it. As a nicotine addict, I go, "Yeah, I'm going to quit someday. Really want to, just not today." Nah. Yeah, don't fall for it. By the way, like I said, $319 to go in fundraising this evening. And there is a challenge on the table, courtesy of Dr. John. I received a note from Dr. John. He just got back from New Orleans, Louisiana. He said, "I thought about you with every beignet and po' boy." Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm. Yum, yum, yum. No muffalettas, John? But John put a $50 challenge on the table, no strings attached. It's just, he'll match the first $50 that come in this evening. One at 50, or five at 10, or 10 at 5, one at 25, one at 30, and one at 20, two at 25, one at 45, and one at 5, one at 40, and one at 10. However, Dr. John will match the first $50 that come in this evening. Thank you very kindly, Dr. John. It is badly needed and much appreciated, and you are an old, old, and good friend of the program. Thank you very much. Let's run over right quick, like, though. I have a sneaking suspicion, speaking of New Orleans, I have a sneaking suspicion we've got Jim in Louisiana stand on the line. Is that you, Jim?
That's me. What's up, Bob?
What's happening, man?
Sitting out on the back porch having a beer, smoking a cigarette. I got to quit smoking, too.
Yeah, you'll beat that addiction one of these days.
Huh?
You'll beat that addiction one of these days.
Yeah, one way or the other. But, no, I just wanted to call because you had two great, I mean, usually all your calls are great. But there were two that really stood out in my mind. I think one was Monday, toward the end of the show. The guy on dialysis, man.
Yeah, you know, Pete up in New Jersey.
Yeah, I mean, I totally identify with that, although thank goodness I'm not on dialysis. But, I mean, the whole, and he's right around my age, where you know, it's done thrown with the thing where you want to work, but you really can't, and then all the jobs you're getting offered are part-time jobs. So you may as well go on, and I qualify for disability because of the brain surgery and stuff, and so, you know, why not take it? But, you know, it's not enough to live off of, so you have to work part-time on top of that. And then, you know, Medicaid, I'm still going through, I'm still learning about that and stuff, so, you know, it's not easy, you know? I definitely identify with that, man. I mean, thank goodness I'm not in his situation. But also, on another related, I know somebody, actually it's a family friend, he's on dialysis and he's looking for, and he's around my age, and he has to go in like twice a week to get his, what is it, kidneys pumped or whatever they do?
Yeah, get his blood cleaned.
Yeah, get his blood clean. And, it's not a good scene. And nobody in his family's a match, and they're a large family, a large Catholic New Orleans family. But so far, no go, you know. And I don't even know how they do the matching, because I tend to think, I could be wrong, as you get older, you become less viable a recipient, you think? Or I don't know how they do that. I mean, unless you're Dick Cheney. You know, if you're Dick Cheney, everything's cool.
Yeah, well, you're just Count Dicula, and you've got your little Renfield out there eating bugs for you, and you, right, exactly.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is, it's like, man, I mean, I could have been. It's just like, all right, I have to take phenobarbital every day. Why don't they just give me a lifetime prescription? I have to periodically go in. And
well, because the doc has to be able to bill. Because, see, we've got a capitalist medical system, and right, instead of just paying a highly remunerative salary to every physician in the country, they have to participate in capitalism, which means that you have to show up every now and then, get the script rewritten, and make sure that, you know, your health status is, you know, where it was, and then they get to send a bill to whomever.
Oh, I know. I knew the answer before you said it.
I know, and I know you knew. It just sort of begged to be right.
Well, you have to explain to the Hon / Malloy listeners who aren't aware of that, which is, I'm sure, a few and far between, because they're probably dealing with some variation of that in their own existence. It's just infuriating, you know? I totally identify with the guy. And then the other caller was the
Mark last night.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had several notes about Mark's call, and it they were uniformly positive and much appreciative. Exemplar of that was Karen, who wrote in and said, I heard the call that Mark made to your program today. I listened to the whole conversation. Mark, during the years that I've listened to your, Bob, during the years I've listened to your program, Mark had called in. Okay, I get it. She, in other words, Karen said she's heard Mark before. In my mind, my impression of Mark was a man who is strong and proud and a very down-to-earth and an honest man. Today I got to know him better. Mark was very courageous today while on your program. Mark and his conversation with you made me know that good people are still out there. His words made me cry. I see that his life has been spent trying to protect others. I so understand his frustration at not being able to do something. And then our buddy Scott in Sweden, author of the Beat the Swede Challenge, Beat the Swede All Year Long Challenge, said simply, I love the guy. He has a heart. He believes in duty and in we the people. His tears are just an outward manifestation of some trauma he suffered in our name. The Horn family is enriched by his presence among us. How can we not love you, Mark? Signed, our buddy Scott, P.S., a guy who has publicly shed tears, too, over the injustice suffered by others.
Yeah, yeah. No, but, I mean, those are just two profound calls. I mean, just, man. And my hat's off to those guys. And, I mean, like I said, I'm not as, not in quite as dire a situation as the dialysis guy, but, you know, but like I said, with the phenobarbital, everything's cool, and I've got a script's good for 3 or 4 months, and I've got to get my Medicaid. And it takes so long to get through this crap. And some of it is just, it's so, believe it or not, I'm at a loss for words. It's so, it could be a lot easier. You know what I'm saying? I'm not trying to jimmy the system, or pun intended, or rig the system. But I don't think most people are. I'm sure that, you know, it's few and far between. You know, it's just infuriating. You know, then once you get, you know, I guess I'm almost in, so I'll keep you abreast of that. You know, and then there's the other thing about the age. He mentioned 56. Good luck in finding a full-time job after that. And then what happens, what they do with Social Security is, say you take a job for a lot less money. That they take like the last 10 quarters of your pay, and then that's what you end up getting. So it almost makes it not worth your while to get a full-time job. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, I do. I do. It's a damn conundrum in the truest sense of the word, Jim.
Yeah,
but it's only a conundrum. I want to make sure I say this right. It's a self-imposed conundrum. None of that, and Pete and I talked about this too, none of that would exist were it not for the fact that we make health insurance a commodity.
Exactly, a profit-making business.
If everybody had access to health care, you could work for whomever you wanted to work for, you could do whatever you could get hired to do, and not worry about, okay, well, you know, I've got this extremely immoral job doing immoral, terrible things, but I can't leave it. Because if I do, if I get sick, I'll just die. Huh? I wonder if maybe that means that the immoral, unethical outfits out there have a vested interest in making sure that everybody doesn't have access to health care, because they, by God, need to be able to force people into their labor force who would otherwise go, oh, fuck no, I'm not going to work for you. You're evil.
Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs, you know, and I'm still hoping somehow Bernie will pull it through. I don't think he will, but as you know, I'm going with Stein, and, you know, because that's just the way I am, you know, rebel without a cause or a clue, or I'm just tired of the goddamn, in fact, I'm glad you mentioned that, or whatever, kicked it in my memory. On July 29th is a pretty, I think that's a Friday. That's a, I'm going to switch to independent or green. I might stay that way forever. Fuck the Democrats.
Well, I'm not going to tell you, you know, you're a poopy head for doing that or anything like that. We've been friends for too long. I disagree with doing that, though.
I see what you're saying.
I don't think.
Maybe
someday maybe someday a thousand years from now, when the Democrats have disappeared and the Greens have become the second party in a two-party system, because that's all that's ever going to happen, Maybe they'll put up a statue and they'll put the names of all the people who became Greens back 1,000 years before, when the Greens didn't have a prayer of holding any office or any clue of how to do it in the first place. And you'll be a revered and honored elder of the party. Of course, you know, you won't be there to get the cupcake. But we've got a two-party system. It is what it is. And the only way to make it go away, Jim, is to have a do-over on the Constitution. And to put everything, and I mean, if you're going to go so far as to create proportional representation, you're pretty much going to have to get down to the foundational elements of the government itself, and what kind of nightmare Frankenstein's monster comes out of that laboratory, I don't even want to think about.
No, so, I totally get it.
I watched one of the nastiest rat fuckings that I have lately seen go on in the Democratic West Virginia, West Virginia's Democratic state level party, a couple of weeks ago. I mean, it was nasty, and it was done. It was all done at the behest and the connivance of Joe Manchin, who is no more a Democrat than I am the great God Neptune nibbling on lobster at the bottom of the sea.
I got you. I understand that.
But the thing is, the only way to stop the Joe Manchins is to take the power away from the Joe Manchins, and you don't take the power away from the Joe Manchins and the middle of the roaders and the mugwumps. You don't take their power away by running away and saying, I'm going to go and form a political party that has no chance of ever even challenging you. I mean, that's why, I mean, I've voted Mountain Party a couple of times, which is our Greens here in West Virginia. I've voted for their candidates a couple of times, more than a couple of times, but I haven't joined their silly party because they're never going to govern. All they're going to do is make sure that by siphoning away progressive goodwill and people who want to create change, by siphoning them off into their party in the weeds, all they make sure is that the power will remain entrenched instead of challenged.
Well, I see things a little bit differently, and I'll probably change my mind as time goes on, but I'm still going with my plan on, you know, July 29th, just to send a shockwave to the Democrats.
Sure.
We can't stand. And I'll still be able to vote in the general, and I can always switch back, you know. Yes.
Sure. But I mean, you don't need to switch. You don't need to switch to vote in the general, is all I'm saying. You can vote.
I'm kind of becoming a tactician. Yeah. I mean, I actually joined the Green Party a while back, and then I switched back. But, you know, because I don't really influence the election that much. I don't know if I was in Vegas. I guess it was in Vegas when I switched to the Green Party. I guess in Vegas I called it the Brown Party because there's not that much green there.
And by not much, you mean any, unless it's on a golf course.
You heard about how dry it's out there. I mean, Lake Mead's like around half where it was.
Yeah, wouldn't Vegas love to have the rain we've had today? We got some crazy shit going on here, Jim. I just saw some video coming from our buddy Kelly from over in the Greenbrier area, and you've got houses near up to their roof lines in water. You got trailers floating away. You got things on fire and blowing up.
Oh wait, that's in Las Vegas.
No, that's in West Virginia. Right now.
Yeah.
In that watershed, dig it, there's 1,600 square miles, and it's mostly on steep, mostly denuded slopes that all funnel into the Greenbrier River and its tributaries. the little town of Richwood right now, Ron, in Canada, because he pays attention to things back home. Richwood is under an evacuation order because a dam above it may collapse.
Whoa. How old is that dam? 70?
I don't know.
Roosevelt age?
Yeah. But, as Ron notes, it's only weather, damn it. Nothing to do with that liberal climate change.
Well, it's also what the Republicans did to Obama. He came up with these, and I'm some pretty good ideas and stuff, but they said it out loud so everybody could hear it, and yet people still voted for him. That would have been enough to piss me off to begin with. You know, that they were going to make sure he failed, not kind of work. At least the Democrats say they'll work with the president, but everything, even things they were for before he proposed them, they were against. I'm surprised he got the pathetic excuse for a health care bill passed, the corporate friendly, you know. And the thing is, I don't think Obama would have gone non-corporate friendly because he's a corporatist. You know, I think that's how we're going to get elected president, short of some miracle. You know how I feel about miracles. So.
Yeah, in other words, yeah, they don't happen.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to let you go, let somebody else get through. Enjoyed those two calls. They were great.
So. All right. Thanks, Jim. It's good to hear from you, my friend. You take care.
All right.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim in Louisiana, Stan. And let's check in with Scott in San Diego. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. How are you doing?
I'm here. I'm dry.
Yeah.
That's as much as you can ask for right now.
Well, here and dry, along with upright and above ground, are never bad things in terms of dancing with the situation.
Precisely.
You know? Let me get the gum out of my mouth. Okay. Something on my end has changed recently, and I wasn't even going to go into it on the air, but Jim's call just now was along similar lines, and then the call the other day from the guy up in Delaware, Pete, I think his name was.
Jersey. New Jersey, Pete. Everybody say hi, Pete.
Hi, Pete. But anyway, those two calls kind of prompted me to go ahead and just basically tell this interesting tale, okay? And hopefully it'll be interesting to more than just me and you and, you know, a few people who may be in the same boat. But it's indicative of the nature of things as far as where we find ourselves. And, you know, if I might quote the noted philosopher Red Fox, who once observed, when you can see the handwriting on the wall, you're in the toilet. And that's where a lot of us are. We're smack dab in the middle of the toilet, and it's a shitty situation, okay? Let's just be frank about it. But okay, here's the deal. Some years ago, I had surgery to remove a brain tumor. And the surgery was successful, the tumor was benign, but the process of the surgery left me with permanent after effects that resulted in my meeting the definition of disability under the Social Security system. Okay, so I get a monthly income from Social Security. I'm automatically covered for Medicare Part A, which is hospitalization coverage. And for a monthly premium, I can be covered for Medicare Part B, which is like doctor visits and lab tests and things like that. And then, of course, Part D, which covers your medicines. And I do have to take some medicines that are connected to the nature of the disability, the after effects of the surgery. Okay, so and there's also a program, a national program called Medicaid for very low income people.
Well, Medicaid is national insofar as it is unfortunately it's administered by the individual states.
Yeah, in other
So who can get it in California is wildly different from who can get it in Alabama.
Exactly, and it differs from state to state. It's available if your state happens to participate wholeheartedly in the Medicaid program.
Well, if you participate in the Medicaid expansion under ACA, and of course the Confederacy doesn't, almost exclusively doesn't. There's a couple that sort of toy with it.
Okay.
And that means, like, in a place like Alabama, if you have a cardboard box to sleep in out on the street, you've got too many assets and you don't qualify for Medicaid.
Exactly. Well, thankfully, the situation here in California is way more enlightened than it is in Alabama, Stan, and some of the red states of the former Confederacy. So Medicaid here in California is called Medi-Cal, okay?
Right.
And I qualify for that. They're happy to have me in the program. And the thing is, I get X amount in income from Social Security disability, and the Medicare Part B premium is $122 a month. Okay, if I'm paying it each month, the Medicare Part B premium, it knocks my income low enough to where I qualify for that premium to be paid by the state of California. Well, here recently, I got a letter from Social Security saying that California is not going to pay that premium anymore. So I made a few calls, and what I found out was there's a threshold monthly income in California. If you're over it, the state won't pay the the Medicare Part B premium. If you're under that threshold, they will pay it. Well, by virtue of the fact that the state was paying the Part B Medicare premium, it put me over the threshold. So I no longer qualify for the state to pay the Medicare Part B premium. So apparently I'll have to go a little while paying it myself, which will mean that I will then again qualify for the state to pay it, and then go down to the office and jump through the flaming hoops and fill out all the forms, and then they'll start paying it again for some undetermined amount of time. So this is the lunacy. This is the it's almost like a catch-22 sort of thing, okay? And the weird thing is, the ironic thing is, prior to this, I would just fill out a form every year to verify income and that sort of thing, and then they would renew the fact that they would pay the Medicare Part B premium, okay? Now, the way it is, it's my responsibility to pay it. It causes a monthly financial hardship, okay? And it's a situation that can be remedied. But I have to question the wisdom of how money is being spent, because even though Medi-Cal is a state-run program, the state's version of Medicaid for low-income people, it's administered by each county in the state. Okay, it's a federal program that states participate in their own way, Medicaid, and then in California it's Medi-Cal, okay, and then the counties administer it. So I've got to waddle on down to the county office, jump through all these flaming hoops. All those people in that building are being paid. So in essence, some amount of money is going to pay these paper pushers, okay, that would be better invested, I think, for people who have established themselves as having a genuine need to be in the program. Their circumstance is not going to change in any meaningful way. So rather than generate work for somebody and expend the money for that, I get to jump through flaming hoops, and I've got flaming hoops enough to jump through. So anyway, I hope it's a clear picture that I've painted here verbally, but it's just maddening. It's a maddening situation.
Well, it is. And yeah, you're all for modern purposes, the bureaucracy you have always with you.
Well, yeah,
there's no getting around that. And somebody has to, there has to be some degree of record keeping. Obviously, I think medical records are more important than financial records. But you have to be able to, because somewhere along the way, this is still a system that's operating within a capitalist system. So consequently, now, can you imagine, and you don't really have to, Scott, what it's like over in, on the purely for-profit side of things?
Oh, God.
You know, you could never run Medicaid if you had a, if the person who was ultimately in charge of Medicaid had to be given a $5 million bonus every year.
Yeah, and all the perks he or she could.
And if you had adjusters who were given bonuses based on how many claims they denied, both of those things exist in rich abundance inside the for-profit system.
Yeah.
And well, you know, and all of those you know all those bureaucrats that you describe are there for purposes of making sure people don't get benefits who don't deserve them, when in fact healthcare is a goddamn human right.
Yeah.
And everybody deserves them. At least in California, and I'll say this much, at least in California, you can A, get it.
Yeah.
And B, you don't have stories of the head of your state welfare division going around putting zero brand candy bars on the desks of aid workers to remind them to give out zero benefits. Yeah. That's a real story from the state of Georgia.
I remember reading about that. Well, in fairness to all the fun lovers and truth seekers out there in Radio Land, that their barely discernible shaft of light beaming down that may spell a marginal good news for me in 2017. Apparently, for Social Security recipients, there will be a small, and I emphasize small, cost of living increase in 2017. And I ran the numbers last night when I heard about this, and it amounts to $30 over the course of a 12-month year. Okay? And I verified the state threshold numbers, and it will not kick me out of the system. So a couple of bucks extra every month, $30 extra a year, and hopefully I'll still be able to be in the system, unless they change the threshold. So the degree of cost of living increase, as they are laughingly calling it, is sort of like at the deli when you order a salami and cheese sandwich, and the guy at the slicer, you hold up the little slice of salami and you can damn near see through it. There's light coming through the other side, and you comment, well, whoever cut this salami damn near missed, you know? So
yeah.
All is not lost, but it is an exercise in interestingness.
And it can be, but it's not it is not an insoluble problem, Scott.
No, it's not. And thank God or whoever else is listening for that, because I've lived in some of these other states where they are not especially interested in the plight of anybody in this proverbial leaky boat. And that's one of the reasons I came to California, A, because the weather helps my health, being mild weather most of the time, but B, you've got people who are elected and who are working in state and county and federal government here who actually give a shit and take their responsibility seriously. And that can't be said of maybe a third of some of these other states. And it's sad. I feel for anybody who is worse off than I am, because God knows there are many people who fit that definition.
Well, yeah. And let's remember, you know, part of the reason, for instance, part of the reason, Scott, that we had to, at least I think it was part of it, that the move was made with regard to, you know, when we were getting the Affordable Care Act to subsidize the for-profit health insurance industry, realistically speaking, is because of the thousands, if not tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands, or who knows, of people who have jobs that are dependent upon those for-profit insurance companies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what would happen to them if all of a sudden we had, and it's a question that has to be answered. Anybody who wants universal single-payer health care has got to come up with an answer to this question. What do you do with those people who are out there working for the for-profit insurance industry when you bring in universal single-payer health care and they have to go get honest work?
Well, yeah, that is a question. That's sort of like the dilemma that the people in the coal industry, not the executives, but the workers, find themselves in when the society is trying to make the shift from dirty carbon-based fuel to something that's renewable and clean. Okay, what happens to these folks who have been in that field over generations? What do they get to do? And how do you answer that? I mean, I guess a certain number could be retrained to do something different.
Or maybe they could be brought into some level of administrative capacity inside the universal single-payer healthcare system.
Yeah.
I mean, you've still got to have records management. You've still got to have IT. But what you don't have to have is somebody whose job is to say, sorry, you can't have your medicine.
Right.
Or at least you hope claims, I suppose, have to be reviewed. I mean, we're not going to, I imagine that we're not going to have, although I think we should, I'm just that much of a freaking commie, I guess. I think we should have a universal single-payer health care that covers cradle-to-grave dentistry.
Oh, God, don't even get me started.
That covers vision, podiatrics, bariatrics. I think we should cover, I think we should cover dignity issues.
Yeah.
If somebody wants, I hate to use this as, because it seems gender-based, but it's just what comes to mind. If a woman feels like her dignity will be enhanced by going from an A cup to a C cup, you know what? Let's pay for that. Let's help make people happy. Not just healthy, but happy.
And the thing is that,
I mean, we for instance, I mentioned dentistry. You know, we live in a time where implants are not an issue. I mean, implants are not experimental. And yet we still insist on and don't pay for even, dentures. That's barbaric.
Once upon a time, and I guess we're both old enough, I know I'm a little older than you, but once upon a time, there was the national will to be about the work of enhancement of people's situation. And as near as I can figure, it began to shift radically in 1981 during the inaugural of Reagan, when he reiterated that nonsense phrase about, the mindset of I'm from the government and I'm here to help you, and as being the most dreaded words in the English language.
I hope Ronald Reagan gets a pineapple shoved up his ass backwards every day for that all by itself, down in hell where he is.
But then he went on to say, government is not the solution. Government is the problem. And a lot of people hooped and hollered and jumped onto that bandwagon. And here, lo, these many years later, you see what that has gotten us. The mindset and the heart set of enhancement of human beings in the country and on the planet has gone out the freaking window.
Yeah.
And now you look at where we are, just several months hence, when we're going to elect another president, for the next 4 or 8 years, And our two major choices are a demented circus peanut, the Orange Menace, Donald J. Trump, or Hillary Rodham Clinton. And it's like, this does not give one, you know, a warm, cozy, comfortable feeling in their heart and soul, knowing that one of these people is going to be elected, probably, most likely. And where is that going to leave us or lead us? You know, again, I intone the words of wisdom from Red Fox. When you can see the handwriting on the wall, you're in the toilet.
So, wise man, that Red Fox.
He certainly was. Another thing that he said regarding nuclear war, he said that nuclear war ultimately will enhance race relations and understanding in this country, because come nuclear war, we'll all be black and crisp. So
true, anyway. True. And you know, there's one more thing to factor in here,
mm-hmm.
and it is quite often overlooked. Do you know what the third leading cause of death in the United States is?
The third leading cause. Well, I would say heart would be one, heart-related things, and cancer would be one. Third would be probably things related to poverty, I'm guessing.
Medical malpractice.
Oh. That's scary.
And I personally think that that is intimately connected to the fact that we have a profit-driven system. Now, if you ask people on the other side, they'll say, no, it's because of them tasseled, loafered-wearing trial lawyers.
Well, yeah.
But the statistics just don't bear that out. Less than 1% of the people who are butchered, maimed, and neglected by doctors in this country ever sue. And less than 100% of those people prevail, probably less than 50%. So, you know, the medical community has some stuff to sort out, too. Why is it more likely that your doctor will kill you or maim you or somehow harm you? No, it's the third leading cause of death. Why is it more likely that your doctor will kill you then you'll be run over by a car or shot by somebody in a bar or, maybe, you know, some of this perhaps is because we've made such progress in the treatment of disease. Maybe those numbers are coming down, so doctor screw-ups are going up. But there is a real problem. And every now and then you get the various and sundry stories, for instance, Scott, about the and people have taken to doing it now. They'll take their phones and they'll turn on their recording device on it and put it in their bag with their clothes, and it sits on the table underneath them while, for instance, they're, say, having a colonoscopy, and the doctor and the nurse will sit there and talk about how revolted and disgusted they are by them during the procedure.
Yeah.
Now, I submit to you for consideration the idea that if your doctor is doing that while performing a procedure on you, your doctor is not dedicating 100% of his or her professional skills to your treatment.
Well, it's just like you when there's a a crash of an airline or an airplane. They find the tapes in the black box, and we had that case here in San Diego. It was long before I got here, I guess in the late 70s, where the two guys in the cockpit were talking about some work-related thing having to do with benefits or something totally unrelated to the flying of the plane. The safe flying of the plane, and they neglected to notice the student pilot in the little Cessna that came from behind or off in the distance and then underneath them and caused the biggest air disaster to hit San Diego ever. It's a record that still holds. You know, it's that same sort of thing. It's not talking shop. It's not talking anything having to do with, in the case of a surgeon doing that task, or a pilot safely piloting the plane. It is something worth looking into.
Well, there was another case where the doctor in question and his staff there were talking about a gay man and about his life. Another case where they were talking about how revolting a woman was below the waist. And it's, you know, this stuff is real. And that's not the people who, you know, when you're performing a surgery, for instance, you count sponges in and you count sponges out.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got 12 in and you've got 11 out, you don't close.
Right.
But there's all manner of medical negligence. And it is the third leading cause of death in the United States.
And on a related notion, they only find out about those cases where the doctors and the nurses are talking about the patient because somebody left a recording device on. Meanwhile, the legislators and the politicians on the federal and state and local level, they're even more brazen. You don't need a hidden recording device to catch them talking their trash. They run on it. They campaign on it. You know, they'll get up in the halls of Congress or on the House or the Senate floor and call some poor woebegone person everything but a child of God, just to prove their point, and to entice the voters back home.
Well, precisely, exactly.
There's no pretense. In other words, they don't even hide what they're doing, you know. And these are the people who are writing the laws and setting the policies that affect the people in the country. And it's like a piece of chain. The chain is only as strong as the weakest link in it. And precisely.
There's a conversation going on in the chat room right now.
Yeah.
Lady Tsuki brought up the fact that she went to get a can of compressed air to, like, clean out her computer fan and you know, your keyboard, you know, that stuff.
Yeah.
And they had to get it for her from behind the counter because of the number of freaks that come in and buy it and use it to go and get high.
Yeah.
And that reminded me of that Jim Jefferies comedy piece, the Australian guy, who said, you know, society has to move as slow as its slowest members. And, you know, you can't drive 100 miles an hour on the interstate because Bubba over there did it and killed 40 children in a school bus. And the same thing applies with the cans of compressed air. And we are compelled because of the fuck ups, the screw ups, the dipshits, to try to take corrective measures. Now, as I pointed out in the chat room, with regard to that air duster is what it's called around here, and God knows the same thing with Sudafed. Oh no, you've got to have a note from your mother and a blessing from the Pope if you want to buy more than one box of Sudafed, and your ID, proof of insurance, birth certificate, thumbprint. But if it was a gun, no problem.
Oh no, there. It makes you wonder. I knew things would go completely batshit crazy in my lifetime. I didn't know that I would be as relatively young as I am, watching it happen, unfolding right before me, and it shows no sign of stopping. As a matter of fact, if anything, it could very well get worse. And that's again, it does not give you a warm, cozy, safe and secure from all alarms feeling way down in your innards.
Well, I've got a question for you from Kim in New York City.
Okay.
Kim says, I hope you don't mind, but could you ask Scott to clarify why he's been deemed ineligible for the Medicare Savings Program? I'm a social worker who assists older adults with applying for that program, and I've never come across this situation, or your situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, basically, it's like I get X number of dollars per month from Social Security, and the Medicare Part B premium is, I think, currently $122 a month. And most people pay it because their income is too high to get any sort of subsidy or assistance. When I'm paying it, it puts my income down to the point where I qualify for the state to begin paying it. But then once the state begins paying it, it knocks my income back up to a level that's above the threshold that would qualify me to receive the benefit of the state paying the premium.
Oh, dear God, you're on a bureaucratic yo-yo.
Yeah, that's the only way that I can explain it. Because, I was talking to my older brother who lives back east when this all began to happen, when I was notified of it. And he said, well, what in your circumstance has changed? I mean, you're living on the edge, even with the subsidy for the Medicare Part B premium. And I said, nothing has changed. My income this year is the same as it was last year, to the penny. My sole income is through Social Security. And the only reason it's the same this year as it was last year is that there was no cost of living increase for Social Security recipients. So nothing had changed, but something had changed simply because the way the program is set up for that subsidy here in California, if I'm paying the Part B premium, it knocks my income down to be under the threshold so that the state will then see me as qualified for them to pay it. But then after a period of time of that happening, my income is high because they're paying it, which means I'm not qualified for them to continue paying it. So I have to pay it, which it causes me to be below the threshold again, and then they'll start paying it. You described it perfectly, Bob. It's a bureaucratic yo-yo.
Well, I think you described it. Maybe Kim will email me with some suggestion, and if so, I will forward the same on to you. God, that's maddening. That's catch 22. You know, you can't stop flying if you're not insane, but if you want to stop flying, it proves you're not insane, so you have to keep flying.
Right. Exactly.
That's some catch 22.
Yeah.
It's the best there is.
Yeah. So it's I think Helen Keller once said, life is either an exciting adventure or it is nothing. And when stuff like this happens, it's not like I wasn't having enough fun already. It wasn't like I was close enough to the edge economically already. Here's something to keep me occupied and on the edge of my seat for a couple of months until I can find a workaround. Which at least puts things into a stability status until next time, until the next thing comes up, the next bureaucratic yo-yo gets tossed into my lap. If they could make this a ride in an amusement park, it would scare the shit out of children of all ages.
You cannot be tall enough to ride this ride.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they would call it, but, it's... And like I say, in the grand scheme of things, I am way better off than people who don't even have the option in their particular state of the state or county doing a goddamn thing on their behalf. You know, they have the option... I mean, their options are limited. They can deal with.
Yeah, that's the point. At no point in time, Scott, is anybody in California just going to say, "God damn it, you can't have health care anymore."
Right. Exactly.
When that is, in point of fact, the reality for millions, literally millions of people in the Deep South. And that was, you know, that was one of my concerns with Hillary Clinton's approach to health care, was to say, we're going to strengthen the Affordable Care Act. I mean, that was her answer to Bernie saying we need universal single-payer health care.
Yeah.
Well, you can strengthen the you can cut the premiums, but unless you cut them to free, you're not going to do a damn thing for anybody in the Confederacy and the other states that have refused to engage the Medicaid expansion.
Yeah, and see, the thing is, this is why, you know, despite any difficulties I may currently have, I have to count my blessings and name them one by one, simply because I may have workarounds and options available to me at some point. The other people in these other states, their options are either to learn to deal with it or die.
Die. You know? No, there's no learn to deal with it. The option is die.
Yeah, but you're going to
You just cruise along until something happens and you die.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Ultimately, you know, nobody gets out of this thing alive. And I don't see anything on the horizon in terms of our two leading presidential candidates that's going to change anything for the better for these folks or me or anybody else. We're going to have the status quo maintained, or it's going to get worse for a lot of people. And we had a chance to elect Bernie. We had a chance to elect someone who not only grasps the nature of the problem and the situation, but he also has a good, firm understanding of the solution or a solution, and is willing to behave in a manner that's consistent with being solution-oriented, that would ultimately cause enhancement to prevail for millions and millions of people.
Well, I mean, okay. There's one thing for sure. If that's happening to you, Scott, it's happening because California's a big place. It's happening to millions of other people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, no. I'm not a, you know, I'm like a lot of other pigeons, most other pigeons, in fact. I hit the little bar with my beak and the pellet comes out. And it doesn't vary from pigeon to pigeon.
Punky resents your pigeon reference.
No, he's okay with that.
He doesn't hang out with that type. he's a self-respecting cockatiel. Well, Scott,
boy.
you've generated a number of responses, as you heard from Kim in New York. Steve in New York said, "What it comes down to is this: we're playing with people's lives over a few hundred dollars."
Yeah.
GK said, "Listening to Scott about his situation shows how fucking insane it is here in America."
You should see it from where I'm sitting, boys and girls. And I am fully open to all of the encouraging thoughts and prayers, I guess, if you're into that, or positive healing, encouraging energy. Because it's like when you're up against it and it's just you against the way things currently are, it doesn't always look all that encouraging, and I just have to dance with it. I mean, I survived a brain tumor, okay? They say that doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Maybe this is part of a character-building exercise, or it could be government just being as piss-poor as they can possibly manage. Who knows?
Well, Steve added to his comment, he said, screw the safety net. We need a sustainability net.
Yeah,
you know, we don't need a minimum wage. We need a living wage.
Yeah.
A minimum living wage. Well, Scott, it's been a very good conversation. I've got to roll because I think there's some other people that want to jump into the conversation, but I sure do appreciate it.
Well, thanks for letting me share it, Bob, and I hope that it has been instructive for you and the truth seekers.
Well, I think it has, based on the responses. GK just said, well, it figures, and Scott will not even get the courtesy of a reach around while he's getting fucked.
don't you love it?
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay, man.
All right, give our regards to Punky, please.
I certainly will. Take care.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
That's our buddy Scott calling from San Diego. You know, I've got an update for you. Got a fundraising update for you. Just got a note from Daily Kos. Daily Kos is only $42,634 away from their goal for the end of the quarter. Just $42,634. So I thought you'd like to know that. Here at the Horn, we are $319 away from meeting the evening's goal so that we don't go into Friday on the front porch with a $519 fundraising goal. There's a $50 challenge on the table. Steve in New York has responded and said he'll put down 10 if somebody else will put down 10. So there's that. So there's sort of a challenge within a challenge there. So there's 50 on the table courtesy of Dr. John. And if that gets met, that'll leave us with $219 to go. And, you know, this isn't a joke. I mean, this isn't, you know, we really aren't making rent payments on the Gulfstream 5 or anything. Wish we were. But, you know, when we dig ourselves into holes like this, that's a great way to not have a little progressive, independent, uncensored radio network anymore. So, you know, talking about $5 at a time, $10 at a time, please, because it's almost impossible to go marching into a Friday with a $500 hole and not wind up on more and Monday with a $700 hole. Or, you know, maybe you could help Daily Kos dig out of their $42,634 hole. Yeah, what else? Thank you, Steve from Georgia Stan. Just matched Steve from New York, the Trinity of Steves, two out of three of the Trinity of Steves standing together. So that means we got $30 to go in meeting Dr. John's challenge, and then $219 thereafter. 10 at 21, 21 at 10, you know, like that. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very kindly. Hey, let's go over to the Skype line and talk to Snork. Hey, Snork.
Hello.
How are you?
Just wanted to call in. Missouri's doing something that I really disagree on. Now, and a lot of people get upset when I bring this up, but we have only so much money to spend when it comes to alternative energies. And when we make a large expenditure on something that's going to end up hurting the solar industry, I get somewhat upset about it. And if a solar project fails, that means that it's going to get like a sore thumb. It's going to really stick out. And remember the Solyndra instance where President Obama tried to back one plant, and it failed, and it just
Solyndra, and we heard nothing but Solyndra for month after month after month.
The state of Missouri has bought into the scam of building a solar road. Solar is a fantastic way to make power. And it can be really inexpensively installed unless you install it flat or if you install it where anything can shade it. When they install solar panels on top of a house, they'll make sure that the solar panels are usually no closer than 6 feet from a sewer vent coming out the top of a roof, because that little shade of that one little pipe can knock out the ability of the entire solar panel or system from generating power. And what they bought into are, and I believe the numbers are incredibly flawed as well, where they bought into these solar panels that are going to be replacing the concrete on roads. These solar panels are basically a square foot, and they cost $16 a square foot, and they would be installed over a new underlying road. That instead of the current road, these roads supposedly would only need to be repaired and replaced once every 21 years. I dispute almost every claim that they're making. And the next thing is they're saying it's going to be $4 million a mile to install these roads. Now, concrete is one of the cheapest substances on the planet to purchase in large scales. When they purchase a road, 1 mile of road, the concrete in a road actually only costs about $250,000 for a two-lane road, or twice that for a four-lane road. So, but the labor and machinery and other expenses necessary to build that road in the United States cost an average of $8 million per mile. So when you're counting only the labor, only the material to buy these solar panels, they sound inexpensive. But when the secondary costs start adding in, you're talking about maybe $70 to $100 million per mile. And I don't believe their numbers of every 21 years. I believe they'll need to be replaced at least every 2 or 3 years, if not 1 year. So what I would rather see is people to sit down and think for a minute. Instead of ripping out the roads and paying $8 to $10 million a road just to put a new road down for these panels to be mounted to, is ridiculous when most of the United States has space beside the roads that can be used.
I was about to ask that very question. What about the rights of way?
And just putting them in the ditch, you can do 150 miles worth of solar panels in the ditch for the cost of doing 1 mile of solar panels built into the road. And that's if both of them were flat and level. The next thing is, in Missouri, solar panels do not work well flat. They need to be tilted up at an angle of 35 to 40 degrees so that they're facing...
Because Missouri's not at the equator?
That's correct. And in the wintertime, you need an angle of 50 to 60 degrees of tilt to get your optimum power. And it might not seem like much, but it's a 30 to 60% drain on your power having it flat versus pointed up at the correct angle. So the panels for Missouri are going to be extremely out of their plane that they're supposed to be in. The next thing is shade does really bad when a section of a solar panel group is shaded. The entire panel group loses that power capability. So one shadow means that an entire section of the road is going to be useless for generating power. Even rural roads tend to have a lot of cars across them. So it really doesn't make sense to even think of, for any reason, to put them in the road where they could be shaded. You actually want to put them where they're likely to get no shade. In fact, you don't even want the shade of a telephone pole to fall across the solar panels while they're generating power. So the actual best place to put a solar panel, and this could happen almost everywhere in the country, is to put it above the road. And China's actually experimenting with this right now, where bike paths are very important to them. And they want their people that are commuting by bike to be very important so they don't drive cars. And they're putting solar-paneled roofs over their bikeways so that people can drive in comfort without rain, snow, whatever. Now, you get that secondary benefit. A lot of our accidents that happen on roadways are due to sun in your eyes or weather. But not only that, but a lot of the damage to our roads, especially those of us who live north of 35 degrees, most of the damage to our roads is the damage that's caused by freezing and thawing and the snow plows going through and just ripping up.
Or in my case, coal trucks.
Coal trucks, yes. Now,
running along at 120,000 gross vehicle weight pounds.
That's correct. But if you no longer have sun getting in people's eyes, you have a lot less accidents. if you have,
well, you've got drier pavement, you've got less rain on the road. I mean, I'm all sensitive to rain on the road today because with the damn near biblical storms we've had today. Like I said, I've seen water standing on roadways on uphill slopes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but you know, if you've got roofs over roads, then you've also got height requirements too. And what?
Yes.
And what happens when you need to transport the space shuttle? I know we don't have the space shuttle anymore. But
yeah. Well, again, with any solution, you have to know what your exceptions are and have to say, okay, well, how do we allow for that? You know, maybe you have some areas where you do allow for that.
But currently,
transport anything on the interstate, you must have it below 13.5 feet.
Yeah, that's true. But the other problem with the interstate system is, of course, its initial enabling legislation was the National Defense Highway Act.
Yes, every 10 miles, 2 miles of the road must be usable as an airstrip.
Precisely.
That means in that 2 miles that you're not allowed to have even a telephone pole. And I don't see that as a problem. If we took the road between Chicago and Los Angeles and every 6 miles of every 10 miles, we put a cover over them, we would still be talking about enough power for the entire country without shutting down any traffic, without any major delays or anything in traffic. And that's a big problem too. Now, to install a mile of roadway in Boston of this type, do you have any idea how much that would cost?
Oh, dear God.
It would cost $9 billion for 1 mile of solar road in Boston.
I have no doubt.
Because Boston's baseline cost for
road. So what? So let me ask as an alternative, by way of an alternative, Snork, do you have any idea how much it would cost to subsidize the placement of solar panels on every roof in Boston?
Oh, it would be far less than that. It's probably less than $30 per square foot of roof.
And so if I'm following your logic correctly, why aren't we just talking about that?
Let's not do it with the roads. Let's go above the house. Let's go above stuff.
Yeah, I mean, why? I mean, I've been, and I'm sure people are sick of hearing it because it was just a 4 week trip, but those 4 weeks in Germany, seeing solar panels on roofs everywhere I turned, left an impression on me.
Now, and
especially in light of the fact that immediately upon returning home, we had something called a derecho blow through here that knocked the horn off the air for in excess of 2 weeks, and that left hundreds of thousands of people without electricity in this state. And then lo and behold, at some point in time, I heard Rachel Maddow talking about the fact that the Germans have on average 7 minutes of power outages a year, whereas ours are measured in days.
They're also allowed to bury their cables. There is a legal group that provides free legal services to anyone who wants to block the burying of power in the United States. You cannot. They really do not like the idea of buried power. Personally, I'm really for buried power. I don't like seeing poles. I like to see it buried in the ground. You don't have to worry about when the wind blows, and it seems like the trees are always growing into the power lines anyway. But
if you live in a place like Appalachia, like I do, for instance, the power company is given a right of way, you know, for the running of its above ground power lines.
Mm-hmm.
And then what does the power company do? It neglects its right of ways. So that when a big storm comes through and blows over a lot of trees, guess what? No power. And then they turn around and this is not hypothetical. I'm not making stuff up. This is what they do. They turned around and said, well, you know, we're going to have to spend a lot of money cleaning up our right-of-ways. Mr. Public Service Commission, could we please gouge the living bejesus out of the ratepayers instead of having to dip into our obscene corporate profits? And the Public Service Commission says, well, sure, why not? Sounds great. Because, I mean, because you are geographically and geologically limited in some places as to what you can do with the power lines. Because in places like Appalachia, you go down about a foot and then you're blasting through sandstone.
Yeah.
And blasting is not good for people. Blasting's not good for people, whether you're blasting for blowing mountaintops off to get at the coal, or whether you're blasting away little hills to get at sand in Wisconsin, or whether you're, you know, blasting through a mountain for a road. If somebody lives near there, they're breathing your blasting dust. So I do, I understand some of that. But again, a lot of that would be ameliorated, would it not, Snork? If comparatively speaking, Appalachia is a sparsely populated place. But if everybody had solar panels, then the misery that we went through with the derecho of being without electricity for in excess of 2 weeks, that would be less likely to happen because, you know, that happened, for instance, in late June. The next day was 102 degrees and no cloud in the sky.
Yeah, the damage would be wouldn't be distributed since everybody's not tied to a common line, or at least dependent on a common line. So even if you had an outage, it might be only a few hours a day.
Right. If it's a two-way road, well, I mean, if you've got any kind of battery backup system inside your house, yeah, okay. So maybe you have to make some choices. Maybe you turn the lights off in order to boil water, or maybe you don't boil so much water, or you make judicious use of the electricity you have. But hey, you know what, Snork? That's the future.
Yeah, I just hate to see it happen, and it's going to get big news now, and it's going to get big news when it fails. And another thing is,
you mean the solar roads? Yeah, it will.
Yes, when a solar panel it needs to be encapsulated so that bubbles don't form in the air. And Missouri is at one of these horrible light places where it gets cold at night and hot during the day, especially in the summer. So water condenses. And solar panels hate any kind of bubble of light. A little teeny scratch from dust, and the world is full of dust. And it's very hard. It's almost scratches glass and the plastic that encapsulates solar panels, just like diamonds do. And any kind of movement across the surface of the glass quickly degrades the output of a solar panel. To think of a piece of rubber full of dust from riding down the road rolling over a solar panel to me is just unbelievable that anybody even thinks of it. A lot of times I encounter people that are just dead set in their ways that that's the way to go.
Well, there's a certain number of people that believe in powering the world on sparkle unicorn fairy farts.
Yes, Tesla's free energy. and again, they misunderstood Tesla because they didn't understand that Tesla's power source needed something to drive it. And he originally wanted to, use something like water power or coal to power his generating plant, that his method of distribution just meant that he didn't want to use telephone lines. Well, at that time, they did not know that his method of distribution would be unhealthy. But people still keep thinking that there's this miracle method that Tesla had. And it even had side effects as bad as causing diarrhea.
Not surprising. You know, meanwhile, as we talk about possible negatives to something like solar energy, or we haven't even talked about wind yet, but a little something-something from the Ventura County, California Fire Department, Snork. Let me check here. Yeah, it was earlier today, or yesterday, when the Ventura County Fire Department announced that about 29,000 gallons of crude oil had spilled. You know, it spilled. It never. It's just a spill. You know, like when the kitty cat knocks over the milk glass on the kitchen table. It's a spill. Yeah. And we don't cry over spilled milk, do we, Snork?
No, but
29,000 gallons of crude oil spilled from a pipeline there in Southern California.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it's no big deal.
No, because
after all, no oil from the spills reached the ocean, and no homes have been evacuated. So, you know, it's just like crude oil on dirt, and, I mean, you know, that no big deal.
Well, I guess back to the power, the Germans who are doing it, their amount of what's called insolation, the ability for sun to shine and for you to get power out of it, not insulation, insolation. This insulation of Germany is as bad as Toronto, Canada, or even worse, up to like Ottawa. And if in Germany is doing it so well, even though their sun is that bad because it's at such a low angle, they even go as far as putting mirrors on mountains for the towns that live in the shadow of a mountain. They put a mirror on the next mountains and bounce light into those people so that they can have power.
But it can be done.
Well, they're doing it, and they're doing it well. It's enough to the point where Belgium might have to shut down their nuclear reactor because there'll be no more customers. At first, when Germany did this, they threw a lot of their power to the nuclear reactors in the surrounding states and the power companies in their surrounding states. Now they're getting enough power, and they also use wind to cut down on how much they actually need to import power-wise.
Oh, by the way, I just had an update from Brother Deacon Asa up in Vancouver. I did not know this. I've thought it for years. I've read it somewhere. You read it somewhere. But the airstrip requirement of the interstate highway system is a well-circulated hoax. It doesn't exist.
I have to go back and look that up. I thought it was real, too.
Brother Deacon Asa found it over at Snopes.
Yeah. Hmm.
But live and learn, right? Oh, and by the way, let me just take a moment here. I'm proud to announce that Dr. John's challenge has been met and exceeded. And so consequently, we now have $175 to go in fundraising to finish the evening. $175 with about 22 minutes remaining. But the larger issue, I mean, we're probably going to get stuff wrong, but isn't the larger issue not collection, but storage and transmission?
Yes. Transmission is a huge problem. The more we can get it closer to where we need to use it, the better. That takes care of your transmissions. Transmission losses are huge. So if we want to use it in New York City, we really want to make it close to New York City. Even though the best place in the whole country to make power is in the desert Southwest, it can be made elsewhere.
Going back a long ways, you know, I remember hearing when he visited here in the Coal River Valley, I remember hearing Bobby Kennedy talk about the need for grid 2.0.
Yeah.
And you're right. The losses, even in the, and frankly, the theory behind our centralized grid is antiquated and probably should have been changed a long time ago.
Yeah, I'd like to see multiple things improved at the same time. At the same time, you're improving the grid and making new pathways for power transfer and distribution. We should also be making some type of high-speed rail system where, if there's a job in Los Angeles and the people are in New York, you should be able to get on some type of inexpensive transportation to go from one coast to the other without, you know, having it be one of your major life purchases.
Well, and I agree completely. I mean, If this country were a civilized country, we would have high-speed rail. But we are not. Our ability to be civilized is compromised by our money-fueled political system.
Yeah, well, for instance, Georgia and Alabama need thousands of workers every year. They're having problems getting enough people to even pick crops down there. But we have 2 to 3 million people unemployed in New York City.
But who wants to pick crops when you see how crop pickers are paid?
Yes.
And treated. Not just paid, but how they are treated.
Multiple issues. Write down all the problems and solve them, and you end up finding out that everything gets better.
Well, true enough. No pushback from me on that.
But there's currently no system to get workers easily moved around the country. You know, we do have need for work that tends to be almost migratory in the United States, and we have no means to adapt to it. If for some people they can't take a job because they don't have child care, they don't have a job because they can't get to a place where the job is. If you could solve two problems like that, yeah, there'd probably be lots of people that would take a job if it was a decent wage.
But when you're talking about places like the Confederacy, one, there's not going to be a decent wage because it's the Confederacy. Two, they have their governmental oversight of employer abuse of employees is practically non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
Three, unions are despised, discouraged, and suppressed to the extent humanly possible.
And these are
the kind of problems that really you push for the change via social issues. You know, you march, you protest, you rally, you do all that, but that only works if it produces a desired result inside the structure of government. Ultimately, the solutions to these problems cannot be entirely economic. They have to be political in nature, do they not, Snork?
Yes. And I see the comments about the robots. And I did used to design factories with robots. People are good at being flexible. Robots are good at doing the same thing over and over again. Robots are very good at the things that injure people. But when, like, for instance, a TV factory that I designed, we put in 2 human stations for every robot station because robots break down. Well-trained people can jump in and take over for them. And we found that the robots made the job stable enough that we could guarantee that we could keep 2 humans working, where we knew that within 2 to 3 years, if we didn't use the robots, those 2 humans would lose their jobs too. Or if we continued on in another factory and we were using 20 people to do those same jobs, within 10 years, 8 of those people would be crippled severely. So I still like to use robots.
Human bodies are not designed for the rigors of capitalist industrial avarice.
But again, we need to be politically savvy to think about, okay, if our population is going to keep having these jobs displaced, as we can define a job, as we can understand a job, and as we get it down, we're going to be replacing all those jobs with robots. What our trick is our government is doing nothing to help us transition from that. When all of the people lost their manufacturing jobs, 60,000 factories since 2001, 95% of the factories that left for NAFTA left before 2001. So that really discounts how much real damage that the trade bills caused by only counting what happened during George Bush's watch. And many of these factories, when they were built in the new locations in other countries, because I had to help build them to get my severance pay, we actually built them with robots. So these factories are humans and robots in the other countries as well. So it's going to be very difficult to bring them back because we're not just going against slave labor.
You're talking. I think if we drill down a little bit, Snork, you're talking about essential questions of the human condition.
Yes, we're not saying we're not doing. We currently have this philosophy: if you lose your job, I'm glad it's not me. That's the kind of attitude. We do not have a national employment attitude where we have.
Well,
so
I don't think we have. In fact, our understanding of humanity, colored as it is by capitalism, is so wrapped up in the idea of producing and consuming that we kind of miss the point.
Yes.
What I mean by that is that human beings like to have a sense of purpose. We like to feel some degree of fulfillment. We like to feel some degree of meaning in what can become a very meaningless world very quickly. And so how we go about trying to create that meaning and purpose, some people fill it with drugs. Some people fill it with booze. Mm-hmm. Some people fill it with
as far as the government goes, we have a product, we have a programs that are geared toward unemployment. We don't have any national effort that goes into putting people to work, like FDR did, where basically if you're unemployed, you'd show up at the line, and they would find you a job.
Right, and those jobs were when you talk about the Civilian Conservation Corps or the Works Progress Administration. Those jobs were almost exclusively meant to benefit the entirety of the populace.
And many of those are still working. I was at a facility.
The state park 2 miles from me is CCC work. And it's still there.
I'm approximately 30 miles from the original one, and it is still in fantastic shape. I've got another one that's 5 miles from me, and it's in fantastic shape. Just bridges were built all over.
But also the fact that those projects also included the arts. You know,
yes.
Poets were given work, painters were given work, sculptors were given work because there was a value to that as well.
A lot of the actors from the 40s for the movies actually got their start in the 30s in those programs. And I can't think what that was called.
Well, I once heard, who was it? Not Albert Finney. The guy who was on the paper chase. The guy who said, you know, they earned it.
Yeah.
He once lectured. At my college, and he talked about the fact. He talked about the number of brilliant actors who got their start in the theater programs that were set up within the New Deal and within the recovery of effort. But there's another component of this entirely. And that is how much do we expect of any given human being? How much of, because as far as I know, and there is no empirical proof to the contrary, Snork, this ain't dress rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has ever brought me data to suggest there really, really is an afterlife. There might be something, but it probably does not involve pearls, gates, or streets paved in gold. And if that's the case, isn't it incumbent upon us to try to maximize the amount of fulfillment, if not joy, that people can have in this one trip, this one ride on this little blue green marble hurtling in its in its helical way through the universe. And when I say that, I'm a weirdo, okay? And I admit I'm an outlier on this. I want the Social Security retirement age dropped to 55, if not 50.
I'm not really against that.
Because by the time a person is 55 years old, they have already given, if you assume that they started work when they were 18, or let's say they started work when they got out of college at 22, they've already given more than 30 years of their life out of a lifespan that is now decreasing from 72 years to capitalism.
When Social Security was originally set at 65, they didn't expect that many people to live that long. It was meant to be only the few people that survived it.
Well, there's an element of truth to that, but the thing is, a lot of people aren't living to that to this day. The people who work in the building trades, the people who do heavy labor, a lot of them don't make it to 65. Now, when you hear some Republican saying, we need to raise the retirement age for Social Security because so many people are living more than... Well, they're talking about their class are living that long. But the fact of the matter is, I could take you to a county in West Virginia where the average life expectancy of a human male is lower than it is in Guatemala.
Yeah. Well, when we designed a factory, we would plan on the amount of brutality to the person's body throughout the day. We'd expect them to have, at the end of the day, the heart rate of 85% of what we'd expect them to be exhausted. We expected their body joints to actually run out like age 50 or whatever, because we didn't expect them to be employed at us for life. And you don't expect them to have the same job. But the data that we were basing things on was somewhat in error. And a lot of people's joints and stuff, it's not unheard of to hear of somebody that's age 45 in a factory now having to get a hip or a knee replacement.
And you know what else is not unheard of? You know what doctors do? A lot of them, because I've talked to some of them. They go through medical school, and their goal is to work as hard as they can and bill as much as they can until they're about 45 years old. And then, for instance, the one emergency medicine guy I talked to years ago said, "Then I'm out of here. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to have all my money piled up, and I'm going to go do something I want to do." And that's and that's the issue. My dad, who worked on a silicon furnace, used to get up every day and say, "Goody, I get to go to work today." And some days he would come home spitting and swearing. But he loved his work. And he hated it when he became disabled and couldn't do it anymore. But by the same token, there's a lot of people who don't love their work. And there are people who do the work that they do not because they want to, but because they have to. Like those people I was talking about earlier who, you know, they'd like to go and do something more meaningful, but they've got to work for Evil Corporation of America because they'll lose their health care if they don't. Now, that inures to the Evil Corporation's benefits because that means they've got an almost captive workforce. What I'm talking about is a view of humanity that says after you have sold for a relative pittance your youth to the capitalist economic system, well, then you get to turn around and collect your Social Security at 55, because maybe that means that you've got 15 or 20 years to do what you always wanted to do, not what you had to do. And, you know, I'm not enough of an elitist. I'm going to sit here and tell them, you know, "Well, okay, now you've got to go learn to sculpt." Or, you know, or maybe, you know, "No, now you've got to go back to school and, you know, learn to be a molecular biologist." Bullshit. Maybe what they want to do for the next 15 years is drink beer and watch The Price is Right. And I want them to be able to.
Personally, as far as engineers are concerned, I think once they hit 50, they should be back to school teaching the next generation. Because most of what you learn isn't right now, isn't in the school. It's what you find out afterwards. And I would rather see the school extended and have more swap time with them. And, you know, people with degrees should even be back in the high schools, middle schools, helping the kids from the time that they're sitting at a classroom completely bored, wondering why they have to know this stuff. I would like to see someone spending some time with the kids saying, okay, this is why you have to learn this
and
stuff.
And it's not why you this have is, to learn it. This is why it's fun. And not even this is why it's valuable to know it. This is why it's fun to know it.
Yeah.
Because I was blessed to have a mother who, when I would say things like, she'd say, because there's nothing out there you can learn that isn't fun to know.
I gave a lecture at a high school a couple of years ago where I brought in a bunch of technologies that aren't known yet and demonstrated them. And pretty soon I was giving it for every class throughout the rest of the day. The kids were just absolutely fascinated. They suddenly had a reason to understand math. They suddenly had a reason to understand robotics. They even brought in the industrial education class, and you know, I said, "This is where it means what it means to you guys," and let them have fun.
And you know what? When you work that curious primate nature of enjoying having fun into things, everything changes, doesn't it?
And I suppose that's about the end of the show.
I fear it is, but once again, we've had a magnificent conversation, Snork. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I'm having fun.
Well, don't be a stranger. And, you know, you've never got to ask permission to call in. It's an open door.
It's just with the delay, trying to figure out when to click the button.
You know, you buys your ticket, you takes your chances. Snork, right. Have yourself a good evening, my friend.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Snork. You can do some pretty highfalutin thinking in conversation with Snork. I always feel like that's two conversations now, and I always feel like I've got a different perspective after we hang up than when we started. So we're at the close of the program. Thank you very kindly, Barkway, in the chat room for jumping into the fundraising this evening. Thank you very much indeed. We will have a fundraising hole tomorrow, but it won't be nearly as bad as what it could have been. We are around 245 to go for this evening, so that'll be a $445 fundraising goal for tomorrow evening. Maybe it'll go down some in the hours between now and then. Thank you for joining in and making my 3 hours a wonderfully spent 3 hours. I hope I was able to do the same for you somewhere along the way. Thanks to Marty and Scott for both pointing out that it was John Houseman. How could I forget that it was John Houseman? But it was John Houseman. Yes, and he had marvelous tales to tell of the Depression era FDR government. Subsidized theater. Well, I think Orson Welles was involved with that too. Yeah. So have a great evening, everybody. Thanks to everybody who has contributed to helping us crawl out of the hole. Still got a good bit of crawling to do, but maybe that's a little bit of daylight at the end of it, and you know, not some horrifying ball of lightning. Although outside looks really freaking weird. We had a funnel cloud over my little tiny town a few hours ago. We're not supposed to have those. Yeah, oh well, I think everything's changing. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, the hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.